thank you for tuning in to the Movie Geeks United 2013 Slam Dance Spotlight. Tonight, we're speaking with Drea Clark and Josh Mandel, programmers for this year's festival. You can read details about the complete slate of films they chose at slamdance.com.
I'm an alum of the festival. My first feature film played at Slam Dance in 2005. It was a documentary feature called Ringers about the Lord of the Rings and how the Lord of the Rings books influenced 50 years of Western pop culture. And it did really well at Slam Dance. It was actually the first time in the history of Slam Dance or Sundance that people camped out in line waiting for tickets. You know, the same diehard fans that did that sort of thing for the Lord of the Rings films, they did that for our little documentary, and they pitched tents in the snow, and it was just, they dressed up in costume, like elves and dwarves and all that, and it was a lot of fun. And Slam Dance really made us feel so welcome. This is my first experience really at a film festival. And you know, we ended up selling the film to Sony, and it got released worldwide later that year. So that was sort of my doorway into my career as a filmmaker. I'd been working in music videos for years before that, working with some really cool record labels and artists like Eminem and Weezer and 50 Cent and people like that. And you know, then I just got into documentary filmmaking with this first feature, Ringers, and eventually documentary behind the music work for TV and for the internet, and then segued into narrative features. And I actually just produced a narrative feature that just wrapped right before the Christmas holiday.
So I've
kind of been all over the map, and I think it's interesting because when you talk to Dre and you'll sort of get this idea that the entire team at Slam Dance is composed of filmmakers, working active filmmakers, and that's one of the things that makes Slam Dance so unique compared to other film festivals, is that there are really no programmers that are just full-time programmers and do nothing but programming. I mean, everyone that's a programmer, even the most high-up ones, are still, at the end of the day, filmmakers, which gives us a very different outlook on what we try and find for, you know, the next great filmmaking voices, because there's that excitement of discovery and knowing how much of a difference Slam Dance made for us when we were starting out, and so we want to give something back by doing the same in turn.
So I'll ask you the same question, Drea, how you came on board the festival and became part of the Slam Dance family.
I've actually been at the festival since 98, from when I moved out to California. I started there as an intern, sort of accidentally, and then loved it, loved the spirit of the place, and sort of worked my way up the ranks and worked as a filmmaker on my own on the side. I worked in music video for a long time. And, yeah, for the programming side of things, it's kind of an intuitive process. Some people respond to it and some people don't, and I really took to it and I really loved it. And especially having worked with other festivals, I really liked how Slam Dance approached it. So.
And you mentioned the spirit of Slam Dance. How do you define that spirit?
Well, Josh just touched on something. It's definitely a family. We have a very intentionally smaller festival. How we grow and how we shape things is much more about the quality of films that we're outreaching to and responding to the films independently made, getting better. But the spirit of it, it's very do-it-yourself. It's very all hands on deck. And it's very a sense of, not to sound too French, but equality and fraternity. It's, you know, a lot of people working communally whose voices all equally count, which means a lot. It means a lot in any kind of collaborative artistic environment, but particularly one where you're sort of subjectively judging films, for better sense of a word. It was really nice feeling like everyone there respected all of the submissions, because you don't always feel that way.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious that, Drea, how many years have you programmed the festival?
I've been programming I did shorts for a few years. I've been running the feature narrative team since 2003. So I had done features for a few years before I started running it. A good long while now. And then, you know, I program other festivals as well, so.
And Josh, how about you?
Mm-hmm. I started programming in 2009.
Okay. But I'm curious if, you know, because there's such an intense amount of work that goes into what you do, and it's all for this the week that the festival runs, and then it's over. Is there a sense of maybe depression is too harsh a word, but is there a sense of loss when the week of the festival ends?
I think Josh, do you mind if I jump in?
No, go for it.
I have no visual clues. For me, I totally know what you're talking about, that depression, the sort of that anticlimax at the end of something big. I think the exciting part of being a programmer is it's different for us. We don't really have the same come down because we're at the beginning of establishing connections with those filmmakers and seeing what we can do. We all work really hard. But Josh, especially, both Josh and I are very invested in the Flamdance filmmakers in terms of outreach for either industry or other festivals and kind of watching them get their footing and asking questions and then being there for their follow-up projects. So I have less of a sense of come down. Josh, would you say something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my work with Flamdance doesn't end when the week of the festival ends. I mean, I will be in communication with our filmmakers for months after, guiding them through the rest of their festival journey, you know, opening up doors for them at other festivals where I know programmers there, guiding them in terms of meeting up with distributors or even getting in with sales agents. And usually, you know, and like Drea does the same thing, as she said, I mean, because we have certain connections where we know as working filmmakers, we've established these relationships over years, we can go the extra mile to help our filmmakers who are really just starting out at the beginning of their careers. And for the most part, as talented as they are, have no idea how any of the rest of the business works, even in independent film. Once they've made an excellent film, that's really the end of the beginning, you know, rather than the end of the end for them.
Right. And Josh, tell me.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that in talking about our size being very intentional, and Josh had earlier been speaking about that as well, that's the spirit, that's the ethos of Flamdance, is because for us it's not just pick these films and have them for a week and have that be the end of it, because, you know, Josh started programming in 2009, and that's because Josh had a film with us at the festival before that, and the other film, you know, programmers in our team are people who also had films. So it's not just we see them through, but then they sort of hopefully become incorporated at Flamdance as either programmers themselves or consulting with projects in different cities and things like that. Like,
and I think that's invaluable, too, that you guys both come from that place, because it means that you empathize with the filmmaker's journey and the whole anxiety of the submissions process and what the filmmakers are going through. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So Josh,
mm-hmm.
I'm so sorry. Tell me about this process, how it begins, and what made the submissions unique for you this year?
Well, it's interesting because every single year the submissions determine what our lineup is going to be. You know, we don't go into programming thinking, okay, so we'd like to have so many of these kinds of films and so many of those kinds of films, and breaking down genre and breaking down, you know, size and scope and tone and stuff like that. We're really at the mercy of the submissions, which is really exciting, you know, going in, because it's like we're starting from scratch every single year. And, you know, this year, for example, three of our competition features are from Germany, and all three films are completely different from each other, and we hadn't had a German film in competition, and I don't even remember how many years, at least in the last few years. So people were asking us, well, was that intentional that you guys programmed three films from Germany? And we're like, no, that was the state of independent film on the world view this year, you know, that's what it was like. That's what was really, you know, coming across as interesting and different. And, you know, last year it was kind of a similar thing with Canadian filmmakers that were really trying new and interesting things. And that's part of what makes it so exciting, is that, you know, we go in with this mindset, we want to discover the next great wave of exciting new filmmaking voices, but we never really know exactly what those voices are going to be like until we get into the thick of it all. And for us, our process really starts in the summer. I mean, pretty much in June, July, when we open up the submission window, and films start getting submitted immediately, and, you know, throughout the summer, and then definitely throughout the fall, it really ramps up. We're just watching so many movies. I mean, Dre and I each week we comb through at least a couple hundred features during that time, which is a lot of movies to have to watch, and it can seem overwhelming. It can seem like it'd be really easy to get sick of it. But what keeps us going is this notion that we're trying to find the next great filmmakers that are out there, and they need that helping hand, and that's what we're there for, is to give them that, you know?
Absolutely. And Andrea, I'm sorry, go ahead. I'm so sorry.
We're all just so eager. We can't even wait for the question. We just have so much to say. I was just going to say, in terms of that submissions process and how we're looking at things as programmers, the other thing that makes Slam Dance so distinctive is, as Josh mentioned, all of our films that we're choosing come through our blind submission, because we as programmers, we don't have a head of programming or a director of programming. We have a team of us that are looking at things, and we're all looking at the blind submissions. We don't have people that are tracking films, that are going through different labs or things like that. We don't even invite people to submit. We just go through what was submitted and find the best from that. And it's a very organic and sincere process as a result. And sort of staying committed to that has really kept us on focus. And it does make it laborious in the sense of just how many films you're watching. But I do think that we have a more all-encompassing scope of what's out there as a result of it, other than just watching things that have been recommended or come through, you know, funneled through different people.
Right.
And
right.
In that sense, Slam Dance is very unique compared to other major film festivals out there. And on the one hand, it would be great to be able to invite films early, because that way, if we saw a film we really love, we could say, oh, we're going to get it before another festival does. The problem with that, what most people don't realize, when their filmmaker submits the festival and they're hoping to get that invitation so early so they can stop stressing about whether or not they're in, what filmmakers don't realize is that when you invite films early, you eat up slots. And as you eat up slots, you're left with less and less available to the films that would come through the blind submission process. And so I think that ultimately leads to a kind of imbalanced slate. Maybe you initially went with a bunch of one kind of film, and now you feel like you don't have enough balance with other kinds of films, whereas with Slam Dance, because we don't do any of that. And every film is programmed with equal measure and equal chance of getting into the festival. It not only leaves a balanced slate at the end of it all, but we're able as programmers to look at the entire landscape of all of the thousands of submissions from that one year, not comparing year to year, but just comparing films within the same year, within the same submission window, and say, now we're going to choose what we feel are the best films, and we're the most representative of what's happening in independent film right now.
And I wanted to ask you about that overall landscape. I mean, when you look at your entire slate, and you think about your criteria when you're choosing which films to include in that slate, are you just looking for the most eclectic group of films possible, or is there a particular personality to a Slam Dance film?
I think the personality has been the thing that shifted most in our years. Like, I know when I began as a programmer, especially before I was leading the team, there was this kind of, it wasn't even internally generated, but this kind of implication that a Slam Dance film was a rebel film, or it was about cutters, or it was about, I don't even know. And to me, the content of it has not been what sustained over the years, because what actually came of it is more the idea of, we're looking for films that how we look at films, it's first-time directors that we think have made something unique and consistent, and we embrace the flaws in those because we're much more interested in a director that we think has legs and has ideas and is going to go on. We're excited to see their next film as well. Our thing with Slam Dance isn't, wow, I hope this one film right here sells for however many billions of dollars, as independent films do all the time. But I hope this filmmaker that we brought to the table is starting a career and will be able to thank us in some way for that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking in a broader, and I think that the whole slate kind of lines up that way. We certainly, everything is kind of merit-based. When we get to, as Josh mentioned, we select everything all in one go. At the literally the last day of programming is the day we select all of the films, because at that point we have the most comprehensive view of all of the programmers of all of the films. And so then we can look at things and make sure, like, oh, do we have three films that are all about a kid losing his virginity? Well, that's kind of redundant. What's our favorite of those and why? But, you know, we're also not limited, like you said, with our three German films. We don't have to stick to sort of arbitrary ruling. We like a wide, you know, variety of films. But we aren't tied to anything, corporate or otherwise.
Well,
a couple years ago, on paper, there was at least two, if not three, films in our lineup that seemed to be about characters overcoming tremendous loss. And if you looked at it just from a superficial view, you'd say, oh, well, it seems like they've kind of programmed a few of the same kinds of movies in a very tight slate. And that's actually not the case at all, because each one of those films was covering that kind of world in a completely different way, from a different filmmaking voice and standpoint. And, you know, whether you talk about how many films are from a certain country or how many films are a certain genre, you know, there's nothing to say that we have to have one horror film a year. You know, I mean, Slam Dance had Paranormal Activity a few years ago, which was really successful, but it's like if there were three or four great visionary horror films in one submission window, we would program three or four great horror films, you know. So it's really about what's out there that year determines, you know, how we pick the films that get in the lineup.
And, you know, I'm sure that the topics and themes and feel of all of your films are wildly different every year. But even so, I mean, artists kind of, their work reflects the world around them as they see it. And have you noticed any kind of theme or preoccupation with a lot of the filmmakers this particular year, Josh?
I think so. I mean, the range is pretty wide. I mean, from very intense drama that covers sort of what's happening in the world today to much more lighthearted, fun-filled comedy, which similarly covers what's going on in the world today, so that it's not all about, oh, let's go, you know, find those movies that are about the Occupy Wall Street movement or about, you know, things that are happening in high schools or stuff like that. It's really about trying to find films that are unique from filmmaking voices that really stand apart from what we've seen before, even within similar genres, even within similar types of film stories, but ones that really do something different while in some way, shape, or form capturing what's really happening in the world today. And they all seem to do that effortlessly. I mean, that's one of the great things about these films is that, you know, they don't hit you over the head with symbolism or with a message that's like, this is what this movie's about. You know, we can point to very specific examples that are dealing with extremely timely issues today. But at no point when you're watching those films do you say, oh, so this is the, you know, that movie, or this is, you know, the comedy about this or the drama about that. I mean, it's all about subtlety and really doing something that is entertaining but also insightful.
Yeah. And so finally,
to me, there's a very obvious trend of most of the world perspectives, either within the story that's being told or the world that they're in, that things are bad, that, like, either the situation for the characters has been bad and it's been sustaining as bad, like we have marriages ending, or literal apocalypses, or bullying. I just think it's a lot of characters who are making the best, even if the best is not necessarily a good action, of bad situations. Like,
yeah,
the world being a bad situation, which I find reflective of a lot of people's sort of life perspective at this particular moment.
Absolutely, 100%. And so here's hoping that next year it'll be about kind of rebirth,
yes.
Rejuvenation.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I like a lot of puppies and rainbows.
Yeah, that would be great. Bring back the Care Bears. That'll be great. So I want to know for both of you, before I let you go, a few titles that you're very excited about, that you'd like to spotlight in this segment. Andrea, if you want to start out with that.
Oh my gosh, we're excited about so many of them. I'm really in love with all of our narrative competition films, of course, because Mommy doesn't play favorites. But the film Big Words is really exciting to me in terms of, you know, having seen so many different films coming through the independent landscape. I've never seen anything through this perspective. It all takes place on 2008 Obama election night, and it's about this sort of disbanded hip-hop trio wandering around New York and kind of inadvertently reuniting, and, you know, manhood and identity and artistic expression and all sorts of things. But it's a perspective that I don't see a lot in indie film, actually in mainstream cinema either. And it's so well done and so well handled. And then there's a Canadian film called The Dirties, which we all love very much. And Josh was mentioning a just sort of topical nature, and I think that's one that deals very heavily with bullying in high school and potential violent repercussions of that. And it's so, so smartly and carefully handled. The writer-director is also the star and is both sympathetic and at times repugnant and also adorable. It's very complex and very true to life in that way.
Mm-hmm. And Josh, how about you?
There's a film in our competition called Joy to V, which is one of the films I'm most excited about. It's a story about love and loss and a young man whose pregnant wife skips out of town one day and with no explanation, and he goes on this search for her throughout his neighborhood in New York. And we dive deep into this wounded male psyche, and the style and the mannerisms in which the film is captured, the way that New York is seen through the camera lens, it's such an interesting new look and a new voice that we've really never seen before. From a female perspective, which is interesting because it's such an intentionally male type of setting and story, and everything just comes together so perfectly. I just think that this filmmaker is going to become one of the next great filmmakers out there. I'm really excited for her. And then in our Beyond section, which is a brand new section we launched this year, there's a documentary that's extremely infuriating in its content in a good way. It's going to create a lot of discussion. It's called Terms and Conditions May Apply. And it's dealing with another very topical issue of the moment, which is, you know, the violation of privacy through websites that we use, our smartphones that we use, basically any form of technology that we all use daily, from the terms and conditions agreements that we click OK to for iTunes, to everything we do from signing up for a cell phone service and just using sites like Facebook, and what that means for the future of privacy for individuals and how corporations are really kind of stealing, in a way, from our individuality and what we have to look forward to in the future in a very bleak sense. It's just something that we're dealing with right now, and people, you know, just recently were posting all over Facebook furious about, you know, the recent changes in the privacy policies, and there's just what we realize and what you see in this movie is that there's not a whole lot that we can do just by posting on Facebook. We have to make this a much bigger discussion, just as in The Dirties, you know, a film that deals with high school bullying is a much bigger discussion that isn't just going to be, you know, handled by posting something on Facebook and hoping that this issue goes away.